this week's episode of Never Thought I'd Say This. I am your host, Jody Sweeten, along with the wonderful... I set you up for a nice introduction.
Yep, because that's ridiculous.
It wasn't sincere.
That was not sincere. We were just making fun of each other's boobs. That was bullshit. But I'm Celia Behar, in case anyone doesn't know.
Yes. And we have amazing guests this week. Celia, would you like to introduce our guests?
I'm going to let them introduce themselves, actually. But so, Isaiah, why don't you guys introduce yourselves? Because I think that's more fun these days.
Hi, I'm Isaiah Johnson.
I'm Stacey Orico.
See, if I had said Stacey's last name also, I would have totally fucked it up.
It's okay. Listen, you didn't make the kickball team. It's okay.
Yeah, I'm having technical difficulties already in this podcast, and we just fucking started. These are our guests, so Stacey and Isaiah. I'm gonna have you both say a little bit about who you are, but I just want to say, because I realized it last night, that Isaiah, you and I have now known each other for almost 12 years, because Harper's gonna be 14.
Harper,
that's how he says Harper's name. And by the way, Lulu, who's never met you, somehow says it.
I met Lulu at Hamilton.
No, she wasn't with me.
She wasn't?
No, it was Harper. She wasn't.
I didn't take her.
No, I didn't take
her. Wow, okay.
She wasn't going to sit through it. She's weird. now she would sit through it.
Or not.
Yeah, B did.
My daughter, B, my younger one, is
obsessed.
With Hamilton, can rap all of it.
Yeah.
How old is she?
I mean, she'll be 10 in August, but she's pint-sized. She's pocket-sized child. And it's the funny thing, but she knows everything.
She had a Hamilton birthday party.
Yes. One of my teachers from my performing arts school, I think it was last summer, did a whole Hamilton musical theater workshop. And B got up and sang Satisfied and actually kind of killed it.
She was great.
She was a singer. Her dad's a musician and she's a little singer. But anyway.
We're talking about Hamilton, by the way, because you were in Hamilton, obviously. Isaiah, for people who don't know, you were Washington, which, by the way, when I posted a picture of going to see you at Pantages, I got maybe a good 25 PMs just writing, it must be nice. It must be nice to have Washington on your side. Nobody could get tickets. Oh, and I was like, it is.
It is. Yes, it is. I know. I am a person who has seen Hamilton 5 times.
You saw Isaiah in Hamilton, I think. You just didn't realize it at the time.
I believe I did.
Yeah.
Because we talked
about it.
Huh?
Was it in LA?
Yeah.
When I took
A couple years ago. Yeah.
Yes, I took my mom for her birthday. She really wanted to see it. So I got us some really awesome tickets and took her to dinner and stuff. And then I was in New York later that week. And a friend of mine is a Broadway producer back there. And I wound up getting stuck in New York for an extra day. And I was like, can I get Hamilton tickets tonight? And he was like, sure. So I was like such the asshole that went to Hamilton on two codes. Yeah.
I'm like, you shouldn't say that out loud.
I know, right? Right, Stacey?
I posted, people were like, oh, is this from the other night? I was like, no, I'm in New York seeing it now. And they were like, shut up. Just shut up.
Look at you. I know.
I love it. I love it.
It's such a good show. And you're awesome in it. And so Isaiah and I know each other because when I was married to my ex-husband, to Jesse, he directed Once on This Island in Ithaca, New York. And Isaiah was you were Papa Gay, right? Used to scare the shit out of Harper, by the way. She was like obsessed with the show. She saw it like 5 times.
I'm gonna go full Shango in this Papa Gay. I'm gonna go fully into the complete manifestation of the deity. All these white folks.
I was just gonna say that.
On this island, and I really wanted to. I've been so busy seeing Hamilton. No, such a dick. I wanted to see. I wanted to see Once on This Island. Last time I was there, I did see To Kill a Mockingbird. Jeff Daniels, which was amazing.
Beautiful.
It's funny you just said that though, Isaiah, and because it obviously leads into good conversations, but I remember when the cast of Once on This Island showed up in Ithaca, it was like, well, now the Black population of Ithaca has doubled. because there it's like one of the whitest towns. I mean, there's more Black people in it, I think, now than there used to be, although there's also a gigantic race issue as far as I'm concerned up there. I worked with at-risk youth in Ithaca, and it was some of the stuff that I saw, especially within the school system, of how Black men, especially, or Black boys were being treated there, was so unbelievably awful and horrible. And I had one family where I had three of the Black boys from that family, and they were foster kids that their mom, the foster mom, had moved them from New York up to Ithaca to give them a better life. All three, while I was working with them, ended up in jail for pretty much fucking nothing. Until until it was something, and like watching them being pushed to a place where they did end up committing crimes, because that's all they were just told over and over again, that they were going to commit a crime, and that they were this person until they became those people. Was one of the most frustrating, and I felt so helpless and sad and overwhelmed watching it. So I don't know. I mean, and I
do you remember where they moved from?
The Bronx.
Okay.
From the Bronx. Yeah. And
our listeners know, I do want to bring up the fact that Isaiah is Black and his wife Stacy is white. Just so that we know that
Hispanic, I believe. Maybe.
I hope I
was that.
Did I screw up?
No. You didn't.
Because I just wanted our listeners.
We all passed.
No, I'm actually because I'm not Hispanic.
Oh, I thought maybe you were.
See,
fuck, Sylvia. We'll get there.
I'm trying, and now you make me look worse. Hard to do. No, I'm just kidding. No, but I was saying I wanted our listeners to know that. These are the things that some of the things that we're discussing on our show today. Some of the things that we wanted to talk about and bring up. With things that are going on right now, obviously. So I just wanted to let our listeners know that, because they might not know. I mean, other than the fact that we were talking about Hamilton and that he played Washington. So I would assume if people know the show, that might be a hint. But
I should reintroduce myself. Yeah, my name is Isaiah Johnson.
I'm so serious.
Yeah, and I'm from Scandinavia. You know.
Prior to this, he was wearing sparkly Minnie Mouse ears with a rainbow flag on them.
So yeah, and then I felt some type of way about Disney right now, so I took it off in shame.
Yeah, you said. What do you feel? What do you mean? I don't know.
You know, I think we're at a time right now where we are appropriately questioning all of our allegiances and questioning all of the things that we thought were safe. And I think it's important for everybody to just kind of go in and reinvestigate what you think your identity is. Because so much of our identity is created by the systems that we've all agreed to live under here in America specifically. And I think that so much of our identity, we don't even realize how much of it was given to us. I think that so in that sense, I think you go through this period of just like kind of looking at everything twice. It doesn't mean you don't trust it. It just means that maybe I should look at that one more time. Like, for example, like in the case of Disney, I remember I grew up on Disney movies, right? Like my parents had the VHSs with 6 movies on each VHS. Like fast forward. But then as I became an adult and a parent and watching those movies again and like really listening to the lyrics and really looking at some of the images, you're like, damn, this is kind of fucked up.
The fact that Disney was a just really, really large anti-Semite also.
Right.
Not fantastic.
This begins the process of the necessity for all of our unlearning, because those subliminal images bleed into the subconscious mind. And these are the things that ultimately determine our self-worth. We don't even realize it. So when you
And I think Disney actually is a good example, because clearly there's content that Disney has put out that's been, intentionally maybe more conscious, or that has, that we're thrilled to let our little kids watch because we do like the story, we do like the images. There are people working for Disney who you know, care about our kids and care about early childhood education and development. But it's a, that's a good kind of picture of mm-hmm. a system that, you know, was established upon some ideas that are really right. dangerous and really well, insidious. And then even some so feminist much power. Ideas.
I mean, the, yeah. the
totally. Little Mermaid is like the worst.
Girls, the worst. To, you know, to be pretty princesses and right. Wait for someone to save them. Like, you know, that's, oh. I mean, I get it. I love princess movies and Disney movies growing up as a kid, but it's true. Now, as you look back at an adult, as an adult, you go, oh, I see how, like you said, these things subconsciously bleed into our heads.
Jody, did you make baby food or buy baby food?
Oh, I bought baby food. I wanted to have the motivation to make my own baby food, but I just did not.
You know, I actually made mine and I hated making it. It was the most like time consuming, messy project, but right. I did it anyway, partly because my ex-mother-in-law may or may not have suggested that she would, you know, do it for me if I didn't. And, you know, I had to win that battle.
Right, right, right. Yeah. Oh, I get that.
But I really, really wanted healthy stuff. And, you know, there's just not that many options in like the store. In fact, so many times I would go to the store and the dates on the baby food that was in there were older than my actual baby.
Ew, so, gross.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's weird.
Well, no, I really wish that Little Spoon had existed when our kids were babies because it exists now and it's totally amazing. Have you heard of it at all?
I have not.
Okay. It's so awesome because here's the thing. What your child eats in his or her first years of life is critical to their healthy development. And 65% of the nutrients that babies consume in their first 2 years go straight to your baby's brain, bones, muscles, eyesight, digestion, you name it. So what you're feeding your baby really does matter. And Little Spoon wants to make sure that your baby is taken care of at mealtime. They make baby food in small batches, so you're basically getting super high quality homemade food, and they use over 100 USDA certified organic ingredients in a rotating menu of flavors and textures. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh my gosh. That's like everything that I would have wanted to do had I made my own.
Okay. I'm not going
to
lie.
Have to.
You know how we like to test things on this before we ever give any sort of, you know, endorsement oh, yeah. or anything like that. Well, I got some and me and my kids, we ate it. No joke.
Was it good?
It was amazing. flavors were amazing. It was super fresh. I'm not kidding. It was so good.
Well, then there you go. I mean, if you guys will eat it, then babies will love it.
Oh, it's what's not to love. Every recipe is developed with a team of experts to ensure that your baby is exposed to a wide range of fruits and vegetables and superfoods that directly support their healthy development and apparently my healthy development as well. And yes. this also made it so that, you know, like my Lulu is so picky and
yes.
she was eating stuff that she would never have eaten in this baby food. So maybe Ooh, that's how I get her to eat.
No? Mm-hmm. I might have to think of it for B, for my little picky eater.
I'm telling you, it's amazing. And the best part, everything ships directly to your door and it doesn't break the bank. It's $3 or less per meal.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
I know.
That's amazing.
It's totally amazing. Listen, no more worrying about what's in your baby's food. Let Little Spoon take one thing off of your very big parenting to-do list and cover mealtime with their fresh organic blends. Get $15 off of your first three orders at littlespoon.com/say this. Again, that's littlespoon.com/say this. I'm going to go eat some more Little Spoon right now.
You're a growing girl.
I am.
What I wanted to ask you, Isaiah, is do you think because particularly in America, the Black community and the Black experience, because they, you know, I mean, we all know it. The Black people were brought here as slaves. So they were mm-hmm. ripped and taken away from the culture that they had to celebrate. And so I feel like only for 400 years has the Black community, like we have, as white people, have told Black people in the Black community what they are, what they're worth, who they are, where they're from, what the, you know what I mean? And I wonder if, do you, is that something that is sort of an accurate thing that I think people are questioning right now? Like that, what have we been told about ourselves? I mean, I can't imagine what that experience must be like. To not know, you know, I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to say.
You're right on point. Yeah, no, it's totally a part of the experience. I mean, you know, when you think about, for example, when you think about how much of your history, your cultural history, your personal history, like when you think about how much of your history adds to the foundation of who you are in the world and gives you something to stand on and to work from. Like when you think about people who actually know their history, how much of
it's interesting because I don't. Yeah. I'm adopted, yeah. So don't know my family, like all of that. So
yes,
it's not in any way the same, but I know what you mean about feeling like I've, my whole life, my history and who I was and where I came from was told to me by other people, yes. Because I don't know. So
that's
I'm not, please know I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying in relation, I feel like I keep wanting to make sure that people know that I'm not in any way trying to like
negate. Yeah, you're not negating.
Order. No, no, not at all. Here's the thing, right? Like we have to get to a place where we can have these conversations. Mm-hmm. It's like in relationships, it's like talking about sex, right? Like it can be something that's completely freeing or it could be something that's really kind of sensitive to talk about. You know what I'm saying? Especially when you're talking about like getting to a place where you have the freedom to actually say what you like and don't like in intimacy with your partner. Like it's a very vulnerable space, right? And so, but I think, once again, we have to go back and explore like, okay, why is this a sensitive subject? Like, is this a sensitive subject because I am sensitive about sex or is this a sensitive subject because we've grown up in this very like neo-Christian, puritanical, hypocritical society that actually
hasn't given us language.
Right, exactly. Or context or anything regarding like, intimacy.
Well, and I feel like...
Exactly.
Right. Oh, wait, did you say, Stacey, I'm sorry, you said, are that your parents passed down? Is that what you said?
Oh, yeah. I was just saying, or maybe like you're bringing carried down or passed down shame, you're carrying that into the conversation.
Yeah,
I think that's something I think people don't think about enough. And before we go any further, I want to get you guys parenting stats. I already know what they are, but for our listeners out there, the two of you have two kids. Tell us about them real fast so we know, because obviously that's going to factor in here.
Yes. Solomon is 5 and Billy is 2.5. Solomon's our son. Billy is our girl.
Yeah.
I
can't believe she's only 2.5. What?
I know. She's ruling, so ruling the house. Yeah. She's real sassy, real powerful little.
She loves to say no.
And I would just have to say really quick at the beginning of like jumping into these conversations. I mean, we've been like trying to help facilitate conversations really through our entire marriage. And a lot of it has been because I am a privileged white, you know, Italian, American, German, English, Turkish, now I'm finding out woman. And I don't know hardly anything about my history either. We've just had to explore so much what happens when we jump into these conversations and you can end up feeling so afraid to say the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I've expressed that to him a million times. I feel completely safe with Isaiah, but I'm like, oh, I can feel myself being afraid that even to you, my husband, even when I'm talking about my own children to him, where I'm almost afraid that if I like say something wrong in the wrong way about my kids, it's going to come out wrong. And they're my children. They like came from my body. So I think just to just say like, we all assume this is a safe space. We're all like trusting each other's hearts
absolutely
to seek and be aware and learn and are open to criticism when need be. And so,
freely. I think like you said, coming into and having these conversations and being like, I don't understand. I'm trying.
Totally.
And that we're all like, everyone's coming from love. And I think it's super important to be uncomfortable right now. If you're not uncomfortable, you're not having the right conversations. Yep. I've had so many uncomfortable situations this week of things I've read or things I've processed, thinking about my own behavior in ways where maybe growing up, I had a Black friend and I was like, oh, but you don't seem Black. And now I realize like, oh my God, I took that away from them, not meaning to in a way, you know what I mean? And coming to terms with those things and being like, oh, I don't... If you're not uncomfortable right now, particularly as a white person, you're not asking, I don't think, yourself the right questions about how we can do better. And no one's asking anybody to, like, you know, go around, like, you know, flagellating themselves, saying what a piece of shit they are. But some people, I think there's a few.
That is a really important.
If you're uncomfortable, it means you're getting into and through some things, because growth doesn't happen in comfortable situations. It happens when you push yourself a little.
Even just listening, like I've been trying to make a point with my Black friends to say, I don't know what you're going through and I'm not going to even try to, and I don't know how to help. And here's where I'm going to start, is just to say, like, if you just need to, like, talk, bitch, whatever, like, vent to me, tell me you're scared, I don't know. It, like, just know that you can say those things to me and I'm not going to try to justify how I'm feeling versus how you're feeling. I just want to listen and you don't have to worry about making me feel bad or uncomfortable. Like, if you just want to talk at me, please just talk at me. And those conversations have left me feeling like, oh crap. You know, where, again, like what Jody said, where I've had to, like, look at my own behavior and been like, oh shit, because it was one of my friends that actually, like, called me out for it, because she was, like, telling me about her experience. And I was like, yeah, it's really, you know, lots of stuff's happening here and blah, blah, blah. And she, like, cut me off and she was like, I just need to tell you how I feel. This cannot be a competition. And I was like, oh fuck. You know, and I thought I was, like, relating. And then I was like, nope, I am negating your experience. And I was like, well, thank you for saying that, and absolutely, like, go for it. And then she just, you know, released all this stuff. And, you know, she's got, you know, two Black sons, and, you know, she was like, where they were so, like, you know, little and everyone thought they were adorable, you know, one's a teenager now. And she's like, and I just watching, you know, how people, this was her biggest thing, was like watching when she goes into stores with the older one, how she remembered going into stores when he was little and everyone was like, oh, look at, you know, and now watching people, what did she say, like, move their wallets and change their, whether they're holding their purses as he walks by, that I was like, oh, like, in that stuff, you know, I can't relate to. And Stacey, I think about that for mixed couples all the time, where it's like, you know, as a mom, it's like, I can look at my daughters and be like, I know what's going to feel like when someone calls you a kike for the first time. I remember being called the kike for the first time. It fucking sucked. Like, I can relate to that. I can't imagine having a child that was a different color, especially right now, and not being able to draw from my own experience. And I, you know, how is that for you? Like, is that how do you, you know, just hearing you say that, you have to ask Isaiah, like, you're like, I feel uncomfortable. Like, is that hard for you to handle?
I remember like when I was pregnant with Solomon, our first one, I remember thinking about it, but I was so grateful that he was going to have Isaiah there to teach him and answer any questions about what it was to be a Black man. And I just, like, trust so much how Isaiah has just found and, like, rooted into his identity as a man, as a Black man, as an American, as all of these things. Mm-hmm. But once I was pregnant with my daughter, I felt a lot of panic, like, through my pregnancy. And I remember calling my mother-in-law, his mom. I called his sister. I called my Black female friends. And I just was like, panic, kind of like, please promise that you'll be there for me, because I'm so terrified that my baby girl is going to come home and be talking about experiences that I cannot hold space for her, or I won't know how, or it'll be so terrifying to me that my responses are going to be all fucked up. And, like, I'm not going to know how to be there for her. And there's definitely been, like, a massive resurgence of that feeling, you know, over the past couple weeks, being like, this is my family, my daughter, like, she is of me, but I'm not of her. Like, the history and the heritage that she is of, like, I'm not of. And so, yeah, I think it's, I'm really just learning, and keep going back to thinking about, all right, what are the things that I do know and understand, what is the wisdom that I do carry that can be little keys in unlocking and tearing down a system that doesn't work. And I'm like, okay, I do have some of those things. Like, I can teach them about compassion. I can teach them about the value of humanity. I can teach them the value of caring for themselves. I can teach them to listen to like their powerful essence and voice that they carry, regardless of whoever tries to silence them, whoever tries to tell them who they are. But I definitely, I'm actually really grateful that it's pushing me back into a place of like leaning back into the community to help me raise my babies. Cause the truth is, this is a huge one. And I'm not going to be able to do it on my own, but also, I mean, with anybody, like when your kids are teenagers, like they're going to come home talking about some shit that you've never dealt with. You know, Solomon's going to come home telling me something about his penis that even if he was, he looked exactly like me, like I don't have a penis. Like, I don't know how to talk to you about that situation. So,
my daughters have lots of thoughts on penises. If you need them to weigh in on
I will have them call your girls.
They think they come in neck shapes. It's like really not, you know.
Sometimes.
That's what I said. I was like, look,
you need dick corrections. I've seen some
that are not exactly in a straight line. There's a hard lean. There's a hard lean.
Fine.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah. And you'd be like, you know, and it's crazy when you know, like when you go to the gym, you're in the shower and you see some shit that's just like, not right. Even dudes, we'd be like, no, that's fixed, man. That ain't.
Right, yeah.
You realize it's like, this is the shape of the, you can't come in with this. That's
yeah, no, a hard left is, it's, yeah, that's going to be
you
a problem.
You never know. Huh? I'm sure there's a woman with a great G spot sitting at a hard triangle. I've had babies, right? I used to tell Isaiah, "Let's go play find the G spot," because I don't know where.
It was there, and now it's not there.
I think it's there. Right. I feel something happening, but it's not where it used to be.
I just want you to know. I feel like that might end up being the title of the episode. Is Let's Go Find the G Spot.
Let's go find the G Spot. Just
saying.
Right. Yeah. I don't know.
First of all, how did you two meet? I don't even think I know this. And also, how was it with your family when you were like, and you know, the love of my life is white? Like, was that a thing? Because I know nothing. Just tell me stuff.
That's a good question, man. You know, the funny thing is that I think I was always taught to make sure that first of all, let me start with this. So I grew up in so many different environments, right? Like I've been the token black guy in an all black classroom, and I've been the token black guy in an all white classroom. Like,
wow.
So
what do you mean? How does that work?
Oh, girl, now that's a whole conversation about colorism, and now we get into it. So like within the black community, when I walk into an all black classroom, I guess it depends on where you live too. Do you know what I'm saying? Like if you live in places that don't get a lot of international traffic, the Black American experience can be just that. So the Black American experience doesn't inherently involve or include Africa and the diaspora and the Caribbean and South America.
Like in New York or something, you get all
in New York.
That.
Yeah. In New York, LA, now the South, like now Houston. But before, when I was growing up, you know, in the early 80s, it wasn't like that. Like unless you lived in places that had a lot of international traffic, you know, you could go your whole life without actually meeting somebody who's actually from Africa. So when I walk into the classroom, the automatic assumption was in all black environments was that I was from the Caribbean or Africa, which I'm not directly. Do you know what I mean? And my parents are not directly, and my grandparents are not. So I had to figure out how to navigate that because, you know, when I was growing up, I was too black to be just black.
I remember that I had a best friend who had an older half sister who was much lighter. And her mom and and watching within her own family because she was so much darker, how they would give her shit and make, you know, and it was, I mean, I've, you know, again, yeah. I've never been a part of it, but I have seen that. And so it is really interesting that you said you could
well,
be
the you know,
black man in a room of black people, but just by nature of being your skin color being darker, they assume something about you.
Yes. And that exists in every culture. Like that exists everywhere.
Humans naturally are like, oh, that's different. That's interesting. Like we're like, you know, we do.
Well, there's hierarchies for sure. I know it happens in the Asian culture. It happens in Judaism for that matter. Yes. You know, it's like, you know, based on how religious you are, you're
that's treated
specific ways. And I've had to, you know, I've had to at different times face my own bigotry against, you know, Jews, because I take issue with very religious Jews, which is kind of, you know, shitty of me to say, as my older sister is an Orthodox Jew. But I do, I find myself getting very judgmental, because that's, you know, there's a hierarchy there too. And I have had to like call myself out on that and be like, that's really, you know, shitty.
Yeah. That's right.
And these my differences defense, there's this shitty Orthodox Jews in my family. So it's probably just that. But
and these differences have existed from the beginning of time. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So what was the question?
You were talking about how you grew up and how she was asking how your family responded.
So all that's
okay. But I'm glad someone was paying attention.
I know. I was like, oh, that is an excellent question. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm like holding on to one strand.
I'm still on. Let's find the G spot.
So all that to say is that it became very important for my parents to not only teach me about my own history, but to also make sure that they took a lot of time to kind of instill the confidence in me that I could only find in my heart. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, they trust my heart. Mm-hmm. And when they met her, they could see in her the reflection of my heart. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
So no, they did not have a problem with her being white or other. Because they know me and they trust me, and they know that anybody whom I choose, and mind you, I didn't bring a lot of people home. So they knew that if I was bringing somebody home, they knew that, okay, this is somebody who he sees his heart in. And when they met her, literally like 2 minutes, and mind you, we came in guns blazing.
No. This is my girlfriend. I want you to meet her. Here's her photo. Let's chat on the phone one time. His dad 2 days later tells his wife, Isaiah's mom, that he had a dream that I was pregnant. And then I find out a few days later that I am.
What?
Grandpa,
runs in
my
family.
Father-in-law, he was like, oh yeah, I knew that baby was coming.
Oh my God.
That's awesome.
Crazy. Wait, so Stacey, was your family's reaction the same on the, like, bringing Isaiah home?
Well, so I brought him. We do this. I'm one of five kids and we do this family vacation. We try to every year. And like my grandparents were there, my parents, my siblings. And they met him and just fell in love with him. Isaiah got to, you know, meet my grandparents, who are just such the like pillar of my family. And what's crazy is that I was pregnant during that whole time, but I hadn't found out.
Oh my God.
And I think that if I had gone in being like, here, meet my boyfriend and we're having a baby, it might have been intense, but it was really, it was sweet, because by the time we left, they were like, oh, if you break up, we'll keep him.
They kept pulling me aside. Everybody pulled me aside in a private corner and be like, thank you so much for making her happy. We haven't seen her. I was like, we just met. Like, hold up. I don't know.
God. My boyfriend says the same thing about like my friends and people come. They're like, you are. And he's like, okay, what's your name?
Yes.
I just want to say, Stacey, when my ex-husband and I broke up, I also said that I was keeping Isaiah. So I don't know. It's just like a thing. Yes. I was like, I'm sorry. I will be getting Isaiah.
Right. Yes, he stopped calling me, so he definitely obeyed.
So our families were very, very supportive and no crazy, you know, like opposition or weirdness there.
So I have to say thank you because you have introduced me to what has easily become my favorite game on my phone, which is Best Fiends.
Yes.
I know we talk about it all the time, but if people understood that you and I actually have conversations about this in our real life, when no one's listening, and we're not, like that we talk about what level we're on and like, have you upped your fiends lately? I mean, just like all of the stuff, but it's
the best. I know.
So much fun. I mean, the game, I love that it gets more challenging with every level. Like I never feel like I'm doing the same thing over again. I've been figuring out strategies for different stuff. Like now I've got all these crazy, like exploding bomb things that go.
Oh, those are the best. Yes. And they kill that big fat slug that I hate.
Yes. Yes. So I have to figure out stuff because sometimes I realize I'm like, you know, not focusing on how many slugs I'm killing. I don't know, all kinds of stuff. It's really, really fun. I mean, the visuals are great. Like watching the little slugs get killed is awesome. It's just so much fun. You and I have become a little, not competitive, but
no.
You're definitely. We know that you are kicking my butt.
I am kicking your butt.
Far ahead of me, but I am definitely enjoying myself.
You know, you've caught up though pretty fast, and I think that's because you get to play in all kinds of random places. I mean, I know that you're constantly playing. You know, while you're kind of watching TV, while you're taking breaks in between meetings. That you were playing when we were having a conversation the other day, and I noticed over Zoom even. So yeah, I knew you were doing that. I get it because you just want to keep leveling up as much as possible.
Fun.
Best Fiends has thousands of levels already with new levels, events, and characters added every month. It's hours of fun right at your fingertips, and you can even play offline. With over 100 million downloads and tons of 5-star reviews, Best Fiends is a must play. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. I think we're Best Fiends now.
We are Best Fiends. What has been your experience in, you know, America today as an interracial couple? I think a lot of people probably think that it's easy and totally fine. And some people probably have a little more realistic view of it. I was just wondering what your experience has been, if you guys have experienced any of the hatred or has it been supportive? I just wondered what it was like.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've definitely gotten some dirty looks, but I think it's just because he's so fine.
I agree. No, I think that might be why.
I think, thankfully we've lived in cities that are extremely diverse. We've lived in New York and LA mostly. And we have a community. We have a community with a lot of like
our community mixed race so diverse
couples, and we have not just like black and white, like
when
really
you come to a get together at our house, it's like, oh my god, first of all, they're like, everybody's so lovely, like everybody's just so warm and open, and it literally, like, our community circle is very international, like we got somebody from everywhere represented.
I just want
to say, in a moment like right now, it's definitely making me, I'm like, oh, wow. I mean, I definitely have like sat more comfortably in our current situation than I should ever be as an American, as a woman, as a mother, especially as a mother of two Black children. So I am realizing like, oh, okay, there's, I feel like we're in a more intense moment now, even just personally, and learning how to really be in this together, how to be, you know, from very different origins, but still partners in our life.
Right.
But I think, and I mean, what would you say about that?
I mean, look, I think, you know, going back to what she was saying about, you know, now that we have a daughter, it's, you know, I will teach her everything I know about how to be a man in this world. And hopefully she'll incorporate that into her feminine balance.
That was very Mulan of you. that just
I mean, you know,
it's true though. That was, I think that's, yeah, it's an important thing for girls to learn and to grow, you know, like I had a dad who taught me how to build shit and do, and like it made me, I can fix things, I can do stuff. Like that's part of my whole, you know,
person. That's right.
Yeah.
And then there's, but then at the same time, I mean, you know, I'm almost in the same position as Stacey because I can tell you the reason why Black women are so strong is because they are the least protected group in this country.
Yes. Yeah.
They are the least protected group.
Yeah.
Even in the Black community, Black men don't protect them the way that they should. Well,
even in the medical community, I mean, that Black women die in childbirth more than anybody else anywhere here.
Yes. Yes. That's so
terrifying.
That's exactly right. And that has been from the beginning of time. So when you're talking about the Black feminine experience in America, you have to understand that they're coming from a perspective of like always being the least protected and there's no follow-up.
Right.
Mm. So there's no, so it's like, it's one thing to be the least protected. And then it's another thing to be the least protected with nobody acknowledging that that is a reality. Right. And then step three, nobody's doing anything about it.
Right.
How incredibly lonely that must feel.
Right. Yeah.
Even within your own community.
Yeah.
And yet they are still marching for Black men. They're still marching for everybody, you know? So I think that there's an experience that I won't even be able to give Billy. So we will, you know, I think all we can give her is everything that we have. Fortunately, we have a very good balance between us. So what she will get will be a complete, life. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
But to Stacey's point, we also have an amazing community that we have always invited into our parenting process. And we're very honest and open.
We talk a lot about having parenting communities on here a lot because, you know, we have our ours as well. I do want to bring up that it's so weird because, you know, we talked about, obviously, we'd planned on having you guys on anyway before all pandemic, all that crap had happened. And then things have gotten crazy. And then the other day, I was, you know, on Facebook and saw a video by Lauren Whitney. And it started and the third kid in, I'm like, that looks like Solomon. Like at this moment. And then I was like, but nah, because I mean, how, you know, and then as it went on, then I see Isaiah and I'm like, what's that? You know, and we posted it on our Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
We
shared beautiful.
One of, you know, the most moving videos I've ever seen. And I have found that, and for anyone, you know, listening who hasn't seen it, please go and watch it. It's basically, Lauren, I don't know, Lauren, you can tell us how you do. That's amazing what she did, but she basically said to ask yourself, when did, you know, her baby, start to scare you? And it, you know, what you watch, you know, Black, kids kind of grow up until they're men and they're all, you know, bringing up different ways that maybe they would scare you. And it's been one of the most transformative things that I can use when I'm having a discussion with someone who doesn't think they're privileged to say, please watch this video and then tell me how you feel after that. And it's gotten more people to drop their defenses. And I think that's because it's from a parenting perspective and you either were a kid or, you know, obviously, or you are a parent now. And it's like to all of a sudden realize that. And I had a client tell me.
I think people have to have a pretty open mind in order to be able to realize that and because I'm just kicking people off my page.
Fuck them. But I will say this. I had a client who called me. She actually lives in Minnesota. Her parents were Trump voters. She has been arguing, you know, and they're a very, very white family. She's been arguing with her parents for, you know, all this time. And she called me the other day to tell me that she was in the midst of this fight with her dad and she sent him the video because I had posted it and that he watched it, called her back and he was speechless. He just kept saying, wow. And she was like, do you understand now? And he was like, yes. And then she called me 3 days ago and said, I just want you to know my parents have gone like all the way to the other side. And they are not voting for him again. And they've it's like they just
amazing.
All of a sudden saw it that way.
And that is the power of art.
That's the power.
Yeah, exactly.
Of art,
but I also think maybe it's this. And my boyfriend and I were talking about it because he had shared it, and we talked about it afterward. And you know, and I'd said like because he hates sharing things on social media, and I'd asked him to, and I don't ask him to do that often. And, you know, he was like, I understand what you asked. It was a beautiful video. He's like, I just feel so disheartened. I don't feel like anything can change anyone's mind. And I was like, well, as a therapist, I cannot believe that. I have to believe that you can change. But to that point, though, maybe you don't change everyone's mind. But if you just get one fucking person, like, right, to me, that still feels like a win, because you don't know if they'll get one fucking person.
Right. I posted something on my Facebook page today about,
I saw, God, you got hate for that. Jesus fucking Christ.
I knew I would. It was a Black Lives Matter and Pride post talking about, you know, really supporting the Black and Brown members of the LGBTQ+ community. I knew it. I was like, I know when I post this and I put the hashtag Black Trans Lives Matter that people fucking
I was like, and they did.
Just please weed yourselves out. Please leave. It's okay. You would not like me. You would not be a fan of me, who I really am.
Yeah. Yes. Not so Stephanie Tanner.
Don't need to be there.
Not right. You can go. That's okay. But it is, I mean, it, you know, and I remember, I mean, the you know, hate I've gotten just supporting stuff or when I danced, I, the reason I asked about the experience that you guys have had as an interracial couple is when I did Dancing with the Stars, I danced with Keo Motsepe, who is the South African ballroom champion and is like a member of my family. I adore him. He's like my brother. And the amount of unbelievable hate and vitriol and disgusting racism that I saw. And again, I am not so naive as to think that that doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. I just was so saddened. And again, this is, I, you know, as a white person, I feel like I don't even want to say like, oh my God, it's so shocking. Because it's not. I know that it's, that this is what happens. It's just that reminder that's so disheartening that like when you think you've gotten a little further and just, you know, and I can't imagine I really can't imagine for the Black community what that must be like to feel like you keep making some progress and then we're still fucking here.
Yeah, because I think, you know, the thing about it is that people have to understand that the negative narrative that has been created to divide us has been invested in for a very long time.
Well, our country's built on it, literally built on that.
But yeah, but it's like, it's a very long time. And the truth of the matter is like, everybody wants to feel quote unquote safe. And to me, what that means is they want to know that what they think is normal or okay. So it's like somebody coming up telling you, you know, the sky isn't blue, right?
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so it's just, you know, and, but the thing about it is that it's just, it's perpetuated in so many ways. It's perpetuated in so many ways. And we all become victims of it. Do you see what I'm saying? So we are all of us, even Black folk, are victims of the same psychological oppression.
We are steeped in it like tea bags. You don't know that that's what has brought out your life. Like you don't. And I keep asking people to question that. Like just question it.
And ask what you can do, I hope. I don't know.
Yeah. And I just think, you know, so much of it is actually not based on morality. I actually think the majority of the divisions that are created are purely financial. Mm-hmm. And I think that it actually, the only way that I see change happening is if the people decide what kind of world they're going to live in. Because the leadership, and I'm not even talking about the current leadership, I'm talking about
in general
American government as it is, as it stands, as it thrives, will never concede to its own wrongdoing. They won't, because they realize they will lose absolute complete control. And maybe that's what needs to happen. That is what's happening now.
I think that is what's happening now.
They are losing absolute control. And if they want to have any kind of control in the future of the people, if they want to prevent a revolutionary war from happening again, then I think that they're going to have to, as a whole, drop down on a knee and just acknowledge we have built a system based on lies for everybody. We have built a system based on lies, and we are now at a point where we can start to dismantle, unlearn, tear apart, unthread the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But the scary part is that no one knows what that looks like. Right. And that may mean that we become a third world country for a few generations to rebuild ourselves back up. Nobody's ready for that kind of reality, but it is a reality.
We're heading there pretty fast.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, and I've always said this, that Americans are so naive as to think that we are untouchable, that nothing could ever happen or fall apart. But, you know, I went out on...
Even Rome fell, so...
Exactly. And I would say, I go, Rome fell, and it didn't, it wasn't like an overnight thing. Like that shit, it progresses. It progresses. Right. And I think we're seeing progression and change, real radical change potential right now. I mean, I went out on Saturday to go to protest, which, by the way, I brought my little Beats pill and I was playing Hamilton and the Hamilton remix tape the whole 10 and a half miles I marched the whole time all over the goddamn Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, yes, you're playing Hamilton. So you, Hamilton was there and representing. And my God, are those songs frighteningly appropriate for
today? Right now? It's true.
But, you know, what I saw out there was, like you said, the power of people, ready for change and unwilling to settle for, you know, some nice apologies in a fucking cookie basket. Like, we're, you know what I mean? Like, this, the time for that is done. And seeing that many people, it does give you hope. It does. There was something tangible and powerful out there.
Yes.
And, you know, that wasn't even on the big, huge, giant day. That was the day before. And I think I'm going to go out again today and do some stuff. But like, it's just when you're out there and you feel it and it feels hopeful.
Yes.
In the midst of some really scary shit.
That's right.
And we have feel to like have there's, hope. I mean, otherwise, what are we fighting for? Like, we wouldn't be fighting if we didn't have hope.
But marching out there, like, and looking around, being like, this is what we're fighting. This is the America I know. This is the people that are joining together and fighting for each other, fighting for
equality,
and all of it.
Well, it's summer break, which...
yes, indeed it is.
Feels a lot like before summer break these days.
Yeah, it does. Feels a lot. Yeah, it sort of does.
A lot of the same. Listen, if I hear my kids say, I'm bored one more time... Yeah.
I can't.
Did find a great solution to it that they really like.
Yeah.
Little passports. I'm swearing by it.
Yes. We have talked about this.
It's so fun. I mean, honestly, like, it's educational, but it's also a toy in a lot of ways. And it's just, it's so great. I mean, it's the best of both worlds, pretty much. You know, they have, you know, just really great ways to learn about things because they're super curious. And it's a subscription box full of toys and games for all ages. And it educates and entertains, which, you know, please, someone
educate and entertain the children.
You need to have it happen. And this is delivered right to your door. That's right. Little Passports comes right to your door every month. And each package contains exciting hands-on learning for kids 3 and up. You cannot beat that. Because you can totally figure out what your kid can and can't do. And then you base your subscription box on that, which is pretty
amazing. I love that.
Yeah, I know. And there's even boxes for little ones, which is great. I mean, it's hard to find things for 3-year-olds. I do remember that.
That's
their running level. Right. It is a subscription box that also is award-winning. It has the parent-tested, parent-approved seal. I approve
always
of it
nice.
As well. Yeah.
Yes.
Get this. It's also only $12.95 per month. Mm-hmm.
Really? $12.95. And they have like different, they have $12.95 and they have all different packages you can do too, right? There's like a science one.
Science, yeah.
It's got cool experiments. I feel like my kids would love that. There's
the
you can make your own slime.
Yes.
There's the USA edition subscription. Mm-hmm. That's so cool. I love that they have all different things.
Yep. And then they can explore right from your home with Little Passports. Thus, why it's called Little Passports. And just for our listeners, Little Passports is offering 15% off the price of any subscription. That means your child could be flying rockets or looking through a microscope in no time. Use offer code SAYTHIS at checkout for 15% off of your order. That's SAYTHIS at littlepassports.com. I was feeling very full of hope while I was watching not just you know, marches and being out there, but watching watching everybody show up all over the place, and also the monuments being taken down that shouldn't fucking be there anyway. The fact that that one in Birmingham finally came down, and Jesus Christ, that went up in the last 10 years.
Right.
Like, which was super controversial. I remember when it was going on, and it's like that, you know, watching people pull down these horrific things and throwing them into canals and stuff like that, where it's like taking it back. And Sean, you know, we follow Sean King, both of us do. We love him and all the work that he's been doing. And he had pictures of these two beautiful black
ballerinas.
Yeah. In front of, you know, I don't remember where, I think it was in Philly, you know, some monument that is just completely tagged and should have been, because it was, you know, shouldn't have been up. And the pictures are stunning. And it just made me feel like, okay, this has been, you know, everything that's happening, again, like what you said, Jody, like, it's very scary, I think, for everyone. And certainly you're right, Isaiah. I think that, you know, yeah, we may end up being a little bit like a third world country, but change is fucking scary.
Right.
Yeah.
That's, you no matter to, what kind of change.
Yes.
We've taken freedom from so many people to protect our own version of freedom, which actually we're not free. The thing that we're fighting for, the identity, the collective identity that we're fighting for as white Americans has also, and this is, again, not a comparison, but it has left us in our own version of complete oppression. Like, we are so busy trying to fulfill this American dream identity of success,
money,
wealth and fame and all these. I mean, it's just gotten grosser and grosser. We've added celebrity to it. We've added all these things. Yeah.
That are influencers, social media, like
So it's like, it might need to like come the fuck down, like just knock it down.
Well, here's the thing. I have a question and a challenge for all who may be listening.
Good.
The systems that are in place, all of them, the ones that help and the ones that oppressed, were created by human beings. When is the moment when you lose your humanity? Mm-hmm. It's a moment to moment thing. I guarantee you there's not a day that goes by that you won't be faced with a moment when you have to honor or discredit your own humanity. When are those moments? Pay attention to them and breathe in that moment. Because they're very small moments, and those small moments collect. And just like any other human being, when you lie to yourself, you start feeling shame. Then that shame hardens, and that shame becomes a wall that protects the shame that you feel. And then that wall becomes a protection of the new identity that you've created for yourself that protects that shame. So when you lose your humanity, they're so small. We run into so many conflicting moments in life when we have to breathe. Getting on and off the elevator, like it just, the day is filled with endless moments when I myself have to just like, okay, all right. Because it's so easy to lose your humanity, and your humanity is very much steeped in, what do you want? Like, what kind of world do you want to live in, man? You know what I mean? Like, how would you prefer the world to be? Would you, if in your most perfect world, would you want to be scared of a black dude, you know, or woman? Like, or would you rather just know that they're good and you're good and you can move about life? Because if that's what you want, let's work towards that. Let's allow the power in our humanity to create that.
Yeah. Beautiful. Because,
we're all in this.
I love what you said. And like you said, the power of humanity. And, you know, I think what we are seeing right now is a really wonderful reminder of the power that humanity has, the power that revolution has, the power that saying, I'm not gonna fucking do this anymore has. And I think our leaders are starting to see that. And I think, you know, like we've just been saying, now is not the time to relax. Now is the time to take a deep breath, like you said, Isaiah, and fight for that humanity that we all so desperately want. And I think that time is hopefully here.
I mean, imagine that. There's like 26 different kinds of cereal. Imagine if everybody just only started buying the cereal that supports their humanitarian idea.
You're right.
Then you have to create a whole new marketing scheme that like plays to the goodness of people.
Right.
That's revolution, son.
That's right.
Yes.
That's how that works.
Serial revolution.
Serial revolution. Johnson. It's fine.
Hard. It's not hard. It's only hard when people try to like
fight it.
Well, and you guys are doing stuff also, and I know we're all close out of time, but you invited me. I couldn't make it because we are actually doing a different things with Good Moms Bad Choices the night that you did your town hall. But tell us about what you guys are doing with your shit's getting crazy out there. That's what I think it was called.
Yeah, we've just been hosting we've had like a film club and have been hosting. Just trying to make a really safe place for conversation where people can ask their dumb questions or can, you know, admit that they don't know that part of history that everybody, you know, should know. And really just trying to take the shame out of the conversation as much as possible. Isaiah has he does know his history really well. And so he's been able to help like guide us through from a historical standpoint, obviously from the perspective of a Black man and his particular version of that. I try to hold the space for the dumb white people to not get so.
There's so many of us. There are so fucking many.
That must be really, a lot.
I mean, really. A lot but more it's really, than I realized.
This week, I mean, I've had like, you know, a few little meltdowns of just getting stuck in my shame, you know, getting stuck in a point where I'm like, okay, this is not productive. And yes, we need to be accountable and we need to feel the awkwardness and we need to allow ourselves to feel guilty for the way that we have contributed to this and the way that we have benefited on every level from it. But that has to fuel an ability to be active and an ability to keep moving forward. Because if we just get stuck in shame, and I'm saying this because I'm in the middle of processing through this, it's like, okay, when I get stuck in my shame and I get stuck in the guilt and I get stuck in feeling shitty about myself, then you just shut down.
And I think too, as white people, I'm saying this, someone's at my door. I don't really care who it is.
I have fatigue really bad, and I'm holding. You're going to have to wait.
I was just going to say that we have to keep remembering, and I keep seeing it like as white people, like it's not about me now. Yeah. It is not about me and my feelings and my, you know what I mean? Like I am just trying to ask myself to keep moving through the uncomfortableness and not get stuck in my own feelings of whatever it might be. And to remember that I have to just take those uncomfortable feelings and use that to help amplify Black voices and Black, you know, people who are out there speaking about what the movement needs right now. You know what I mean? Yeah. Because I don't want to further, like, you know, you were talking about like that fine line of getting stuck in the shame of it and also using that as a, you know, as a catapult to move you forward. And I think, you know, we're just trying to affect change and all of us in the most radical way possible for, you know what I mean? And I think that I'm so happy to see so many people out there finally trying to recognize the truth of what the experience has been for so many Americans that we have pushed under the rug or said isn't true or said, you know,
all or negated one way or the other.
Right.
Wait, before we forget, because I wouldn't let you tell the story before the podcast started, because I think it's really fucking funny. You have to tell Isaiah and Stacey about your 23andMe experience.
I started to tell the story.
I'm honestly going to go pee while you tell this.
She's
in my pants. I'm not kidding.
Please do that. So my 23andMe, because I'm adopted, like I said, I don't know what I am, where I'm from, what, you know, and I did it. And if I told you I could possibly be like the whitest white girl you've ever met, because what started this to our listeners is that Isaiah said, well, we were talking about that we all have our, you know, our, where we all come from is, you know, if we trace it back or whatever. Well, originally in my 23andMe, it was like you had like a 0.02%. So it was like 99.08 or whatever. They rescinded. I actually got an email that said, we are taking back the other, like you are all white Northern European. Like, just the whitest. But I was like, damn.
They're like, we are taking back your
They're like, actually, 0.02%. Yeah, you thought you were white.
You can't even have that.
You're so fucking white that we're actually going to take this little piece back. Like, I was like, damn.
They wanted you to be a believer.
Just right. No, oh they're gosh. Like, no, sorry, kid. You are just as white, like English Irish, as they come.
You know, that proves there's real scientists on the other side. Like,
they're there. And they're like, nah, bitch, you know, nah.
They're like, no, there. Actually, you I messed nothing. That test up, girl. You
right.
Love it.
Oh, yeah, amazing.
They were like, well, I guess what it was is they like I don't know what they did, but they found out. Yeah, so I they were like, no, actually, we take that back. You have
not even
zero.
Not even.
It was like I had like 0.02%. It was like Northern African, and I don't. There was something else in there that sounded like Mediterranean, some sort of something. Yeah. You know,
no, Portuguese or something.
Just, right? Yeah, something that I could have been like, hey, I have a little bit. No, I'm just fucking white.
Yeah, you're just like you're just whitey on whitey pants now. Like that.
Yeah, just whitey, like, yeah.
That is actually hilarious. They had like a rogue scientist in there, like
yeah. Black they were like, actually, we've done a little more school. Research to really discover this, and we fucked up.
Yeah. That's so funny.
Yeah.
So, and again, if the whitest goddamn white girl can be out there marching for over 10 miles,
hey, listen,
come on, people, come
tell
on,
tell
it is fine. Yeah.
Tell them you're like in the South. You're like what we would call lily white. Like there's different gradations of white.
Right.
You'd be like, nah, she lily white.
She lily, right.
All the way through.
That's gonna be her new nickname for me from now.
Lily white. Yeah. Yep. That's your stripper name.
Right. Lily. Just call me Lily.
Lily white.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Oh, she just went from Lady Sweeten in my phone to Lily White in my Lily phone. Just so you know, that's 100% gonna
Lady
fucking happen.
Lady Lily White Sweeten.
Yeah. Lady, yes. Yeah. Lady yes. Lily White Sweeten to you, motherfucker. Right. Yeah. All right, fine. I hear well, you guys, we lost Stacey for a second. Okay.
No,
I'm here. There's a baby awake.
Oh, everyone had to pee at this point.
I know.
Right.
Well, you guys, where can we find both of you on social media? Stacey, I don't feel like you're on social media because I feel like I've attempted to stalk you.
Just recently.
Hi.
Hi, Solomon. I am at Stacey Orico, which is, hold on, baby.
Yes.
go watch with Billy. Yeah.
Get your own game. Yeah, go ahead.
You can get your own game.
we're familiar.
I'm at Stacey Orico, which is Stacie, last name Orrico. And Isaiah.
I am at Isaiah's Lament. ISAIAHSLAMENT. One word, at Isaiah's Lament. And just because we had mentioned it, I would love to refer everybody to Lauren Whitney's page so you can see this amazing video. She is at Lauren, LAURYN. Whitney, WHITNEY, one word, at Lauren Whitney.
She's got an organization called Authentic Voices.
Yes.
That you can keep an eye out for.
Yeah, hashtag Authentic Voices for Change.
We actually sent her a little message. I don't think she saw it, but we did send her one from our Never Thought I'd Say This to let her know that we love the videos
good.
So much and that we posted.
Absolutely.
It,
so. Yeah, we'll tell her to look out.
Yeah.
Please do.
We love you guys. We love all the work that you're doing. Thank you for repping open, honest, vulnerable mommyhood and womanhood in the world. We
thank
love
you.
That. We yeah, talk about you. That all the time.
Self-Brazilian bikini waxes.
Oh, you listened to that one, did you?
I did.
Uh-huh.
Yes. I'm inspired.
Do you need any pointers?
Don't,
I'm going in right now.
Has lost her mind. Don't listen.
We're a Nair family.
We all are Nair family.
Oh, that was.
I feel like I have just jumped into a conversation and learned.
It takes the first time. I have to like bravely, boldly try to do it like twice without burning myself.
I tried to, after I did the bikini wax the first time, I totally tried to convince my boyfriend to let me do it to him also.
Dustin, don't do it.
He won't do it. He laughed and was like, yeah. And then I was like,
yeah,
no, I'm serious.
Right.
That's not enough.
Yeah, that's I can imagine weird. If I walked into the room with a bottle of Nair, my boyfriend would be like, get the fuck out. You can leave with that. Yeah.
I'll try anything once.
I've done
I'll try it twice just to figure out if I really don't like it, but I've done there, so I don't like it.
It just smells delicious.
It smells so
It smells like a perm. That's why I don't understand.
It does smell like a perm. That's what it is. Exactly what it is.
So, well, I've done two at-home bikini waxes.
Oh, my God.
Good work.
It's really not that great.
You need to open up a quarantine shop, girl. Make some money on the side.
You do know that was not the work he was, like, congratulating you about doing, right? But that was not... He wasn't like, keep up with the bikini waxes, Celia. That wasn't...
It was deeper.
Couldn't it be both things? Yeah,
it was much deeper.
It could be.
I don't want to hear about. I don't want to hear about you and separating and waxing. I don't know where this is going. It's just not going to go well.
Also, in this conversation, all I see pop up in our chat is Emily saying, "Oh my God, Celia!
Oh my God! Oh my God! She's gonna cut us off."
Yes.
Anyway, well,
you guys, thank you so much for joining.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yes, absolutely. And if you want to find us on Instagram and Facebook, it is at Never Thought I'd Say This. Twitter, we don't give a shit about because we can't figure out what our name is. Or you can email us.
Totally true.
You can email us. Never thought I'd at protonmail.com, mm-hmm. which is a real thing.
It is. Yep.
So anyway, hit us with your emails, oh my God. I can't.
Your facials?
I just said your facials, you guys. I said
Jesus fucking Christ. Dildo holding lonely girl over here.
There you go.
Holy God. Okay. Anyway, dear God. We're done now. He's killing the parenting game.
And not your kid.
Kill it.
Never Thought I'd Say This is a co-production by Audioboom and Main Event Media.